Well, I guess I'm not hearing from the spot. We are live. Uh-oh. Yeah, we are live at Kentucky Bourbon Festival. This is the Scotchy Bourbon Boys, and let's just go straight to... Another episode podcast of the Scotchy Bourbon Boys. We are live from the Kentucky Bourbon Festival here in Kentucky. We have a special guest. He's been on the podcast before. This is Greg Schneider. Welcome.
Welcome, Greg. Glad to have you here.
My pleasure, guys. Appreciate the opportunity to meet with you again.
Yeah. Yes. Now we're laying down a podcast, but we've just been seeing each other all weekend. The Bardstown Bourbon Company tour that we took last Wednesday was fantastic. It just was, we appreciated it. Thank you so much. Getting in the Bardstown Bourbon Company Spirit Library to see just the history of what bourbon is. And then also then just going through the distillery, but then you showing us, you know, all the different stages of where you're at with Chicken Cock. It was phenomenal.
You talk about a classic process-intensive industry. My goodness. And what it would take, what was sunk to get to where that is. That's amazing. Well,
as always, I had fun with y'all and love showing you where we make Chicken Cock and giving you an opportunity to kind of taste the progression of what we have aging. So it was a fun night for me as well.
All right.
Yeah, well... we have Xavier here, we have Super Nash, myself Tiny, and then we have Roxy over there running social media. We are Facebook Living right now. We also are recording for YouTube, so everybody check us out on all the medias. But right now we just want to get down to, you know, you've been, Greg, coming to these Kentucky Bourbon Festivals in many different clothes, you know what I mean? You've come, I mean, forever. It's like you're not, you don't always come in the same capacity. It's not like you've just been working at Brown and Forman for, you know, a lifetime. You've done it for so many different distilleries. Just give us a perspective of the Kentucky Bourbon Festival.
The very first Kentucky Bourbon Festival was 30 years ago, 1991. And I was director of operations for Bluegrass Cooperage, which is owned by Brown Forman. And of course, back then, we made barrels not only for the Brown Forman companies, being Jack Daniels, Early Times, and Old Forester at that time. Later on, Woodford Reserve came along later in the 1990s. But we made barrels for basically everybody in the industry. There were really two cooperages at that time, Bluegrass and Independence Dave, and another small cooperage actually out in Cuba, Missouri. McGinnis had actually made barrels for Heaven Hill. Exclusively, but anyhow, we made barrels for everybody. So I got to give me the opportunity to get into all the different distilleries and meet all the players, master distillers, and got to taste their bourbons and that. So at the very first festival, it was just basically a cocktail party. You know, everybody brought some of their bourbons, and we got together to the Rotunda at Stephen Foster, my old Kentucky home park over here in Bardstown. And everybody had their bourbon at the bar, and we just had some appetizer, finger food type stuff. Just had a big party. It was a one-night deal. That was the very first Kentucky Bourbon Festival. And it just kind of escalated and grew from there, you know, exponentially. So.
Yeah, I mean, now you're looking at the 30th anniversary, and we're looking at it's, what would you say, still toned down. I'm looking forward to next year already. But I think this year, compared to the, we had come in 2019, they pulled all the events into one area and then got everything. I think that is something that added a uniqueness, because some of the events the last couple of years always would be off-site someplace else. And yeah, it would be indoors and air-conditioned. Yeah, and you are taking a risk in Kentucky in September for too hot or humid, whereas when we were here in 2019, humidity wasn't the problem. It was all dry. Everything was dry.
Or rain, like we had that big flood the other day.
Yeah, so, but, you know, what did you, so far, I know you being at the festival, and you weren't sure initially, and now you guys are there representing, and what do you think about what, you know, how it's going this?
Yeah, well, you know, it was kind of a question mark. A lot of people's mind, you know, they totally changed the format, Matt. I, you know, haven't been here that long. I was here for a few hours yesterday. You know, in what little time I've been here, I've probably seen some pluses and maybe a few minuses, but you know, you live and you learn, and kind of improve as you go. So yeah, the format is totally different. You know, there was a lot of folks in town that didn't much care for the new format, because it had grown to kind of like a carnival festival, almost like a state fair.
Right.
Atmosphere, you know. And so I think they want to tone it back and really focus on you know, the true epicenter of this whole festival, and that's Kentucky Bourbon.
Right. That is exactly what they're trying to do. This is all about bourbon, and bourbon's gotten big enough to handle that. Whereas in the past festivals, if you were doing that, you know, in some of the years, you wouldn't have had that many people coming out, right? But having it be more the carnival, that served the purpose for it. But now that it's changed and evolved, the first year it's just kind of, I thought, a shock to the community. But I think going forward, they'll have it all figured out.
I can tell you this, I don't believe I didn't see a person not smiling yesterday all day long. So that
yeah.
was here, so.
And when we were here for Bourbon in the Air, okay, and that was an unbelievable event. It really was. All the master distillers were here running around, and then yesterday, the ones that hadn't made one that night, then you even had more master distillers running around, and it's just the industry is so well represented for this festival, and that's one of the cool things, and that's why we were so happy to be here and then be invited to come here and do this, and then and yesterday that was you were definitely promoting your product. So what are you guys doing over at the Chicken Cock booth?
Yeah, well, basically we're sampling our two primary products. That's our Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey. It's 90 proof. Bottle right here, and then we're also sampling our Kentucky straight rye whiskey. So that's two offerings we have right now. Later this year, we're going to come out with a couple more limited time offerings. We've got it's actually kind of give you a heads up on it, but we've got a 20-year-old Canadian rye that we're going to be bottling next month, and it's actually going to be the bottle's going to be sealed in a tin can. It's kind of a throwback, and it's paying homage to the Chicken Cock brand back during the Prohibition, when the brand was actually sold to a Canadian company, and they made Canadian rye, put it in the bottle, and then they seal that bottle in a tin can. So we got a replica tin can, and it looks pretty good.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
That sounds exciting.
I hadn't heard that before. That's new news.
All right. Y'all heard it here first.
Price point's going to be pretty steep, but it is a limited offer.
So. Yes. We understand at this point what you guys are doing, and that's the whole, what you are trying to do through the distilling and everything. That's when everything switches over. That's when you're going to be able to deal with your price point being what it needs to be.
I hope so.
Yeah. I mean, good, especially in, as you know, in finding good aged whiskey in this market, you've told me this before, it's not cheap anymore, and it's not readily available. You have to kind of work to get that.
You know, unfortunately, a lot of companies saw this big boom and distilleries crank up, and they say, oh, there'll be plenty of whiskey to source or acquire in a couple of years. That just hadn't happened. I'm telling you, the demand is still exceeding the available supply.
Right, and when you look at what the clear spirits market, is doing, you know, overall, it's compared to the bourbon or the whiskey market doesn't even come close to what clear, but they've gotten their share back and a little bit more. But just imagine how much bigger this could get.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, I think a lot of what we found is a lot of people, young people, are starting to enjoy whiskey the way that it's meant to be enjoyed, instead of just trying to do shots and get fucked up. You know what I mean?
You know, there's a lot of pessimists out there that they keep thinking that, well, you know, this boom was just a flash in the pan, you know, it's going to die off here in another year or two, and I don't think so.
I don't see that happening.
It's doing great.
And I find that out the more and more, because we get a lot of people that's been coming by and talking with us about it, and we've had a whole lot of younger crowd come through. And you can see it, the passion that they're starting to get in their eyes. And
in this younger crowd, too, part of what I really enjoy about it, you know, the bourbon lovers today are so much more educated than back when I was younger, you know, and they want to learn about
yes.
it. And so, you know, when you try to share some information with them, you know, they're just entrenched in what you have to say, and it's fun. I enjoy doing it.
That's what's getting more fun about it, like the tastings and stuff that we're doing, the lower entry level bourbons and all, to bring people in and all, and give them some kind of something to, so they don't go out there blind, and give them something to start with.
Sure.
So you got any
questions? No, I was going to say, and I...
What?
So they just don't go out and buy blends because everybody's buying blends?
Yeah.
Some do. Yeah, some do.
I was just going to add, and I added this the other day, but the thing that's amazing is where you have these brands that are several expressions deep, and they come out with another expression. I asked the question the other day, is there a danger of, say, this new, shiny new expression cannibalizing your existing sales? And the answer was no, because the bourbon drinker will just buy two bottles or three bottles instead of one. That's with that momentum, like, I don't see that diminishing anytime soon.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And another thing that does for you, you know, the more expression you got, the more shelf space you got, you know, in the liquor store.
The other thing about bourbon is it is so indigenously American, indigenously Appalachian. You know, it's when you're drinking bourbon, you're part of something that was going on many, many moons ago and is going to go for many years in the future. So you're part of something that's just bigger than yourself sitting down to have a drink.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the appeal.
Absolutely.
So I've never asked this question of you before, but you're bringing back this brand personally. I understand it's through a company and everything, but you've put your stamp on, you're bringing back something, the part of history, and hopefully you'll have brought it back so that as it keeps going, it just keeps going, you know, kind of thing. What importance when you're doing that, what kind of pressure do you put on yourself?
There's no pressure at all. I'm having fun. I gotta tell you, you know, it's one of those things that, through my consulting service, I've got several companies that I work with. But as master distiller, serving as master distiller for chicken cock and whiskey, you know, it gives me the opportunity to take 43 years of knowledge and experience. And I've been very blessed to work for a number of companies in a number of different capacities. And again, I've made whiskey, I've aged whiskey, I've bottled and shipped whiskey. I've made dark barrels, which is an important aspect, as you guys know. And so to have that opportunity to gain full exposure to every aspect that impacts it, and then take that knowledge and experience and really focus it on one brand that is so iconic and really has a great history that a lot of people don't know about. To be able to resurrect it back to Kentucky and bring it back to where it is today. Beginning of 2020, before COVID, chicken cock was selling in about 12 states. Today, a year and a half later, we're in 42 states. So that kind of gives you an idea of how popular it's become and the momentum that it's taken.
So you've almost quadrupled your geographical reach.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. And it's a dilemma because we got limited amounts of whiskey right now.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, it's a good problem to have, but a problem nonetheless. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we were ecstatic when all of a sudden it went to the shelves in Ohio. It's like I don't have to you know, I don't have to covet that bottle. I can just drink it and go get, I can get another one, and I'm happy about that. The other thing is, you pretty much preceded the finished barrel bourbons. You were pretty much at the beginning, because when you started doing your Rise, the Righteous Blonde, and not the, but the beer barrel finished when we first, people weren't as accepting at that time of barrel finished bourbons, you know? And you guys put it out, it was kind of, it was definitely needed, you know, met with, it was accepted, but it was still very limited capacity. But at the same time, why, when we first started this just, you know, 2.5 years ago, when someone mentioned a finished bourbon, 500 bourbon enthusiasts would jump down your throat and tell you that it's not bourbon and they ain't drinking it. And now when you see all the finished bourbons, everybody's throwing a party and everybody's drinking finished bourbons. And I think that's spectacular, because the finished bourbon is a really nice experience. So what made you at the forefront of that at that time?
Well, to that point, I mean, I think today's drinkers, again, their palates seem to be more sophisticated, if that's the right term. But yet, they like complexity. And when you can enhance a bourbon with some other flavors, you know, you guys the other night, you got to sample a rye whiskey that we have finishing in a rum barrel. And again, just through my years of experience, I thought it would be pretty cool. And I think I know there's some out there that know similar things. But, you know, our rye has nice spicy notes. It has little peppery notes to it. And I thought a little sweetness that the rum would add to it. Not too much, but just enough would really be a nice, you know, add to the complexity and really give it a nice full balance of flavors that I think people will enjoy.
And it did.
We did.
I'm not a fan of rye, as you know, but your the Righteous Blonde, the beer barrel finish, and now that what we tasted with that rum finish, that was very pleasurable, and I would drink that with next to a bourbon anytime.
Absolutely. It was so delicious it knocked me off my chair.
We don't have to go into that, Rachel.
No. So is anybody watching on Facebook Live at all?
Yeah, there's a couple. There's well, Chris is watching.
There you go.
And somebody else's name is too hard to pronounce.
Okay, they're just watching.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
No questions, though. If there were, I would have.
You would have jumped in.
Right. Yeah.
So you have any questions?
Do I have any questions?
Yourself, personally? No?
Roxy's always got a question. Oh, we stumped her.
Have we done so many podcasts together?
Well, right. And tours now. I mean, we've done tours, podcasts. It's just wonderful. Do you have a...
Yeah, I want to ask a question, and I don't want you to reveal any secrets that you have, but just if this is a question that you don't mind talking about. Well, Super Nash does, but I don't. You know, like, you think, okay, I'm going to resurrect this historical brand. And it's like, that's a great idea, and it is a great idea. What was the hardest part about convincing others that it was going to be a great idea?
Well, to be quite fair, the vision actually came from the founder of Grain and Barrel Spirits, who owns the brand, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, unfortunately, well, let me back up. Chicken Cock really had a great quality reputation before the distillery burnt down and the brand, you know, decided not to rebuild. The brand sat idle for many, many years. And when Monty had acquired the brand rights of Chicken Cock, you know, like most kind of small company, they need cash flow. Okay, they got limited funds and need cash flow. And so, like many, you know, he was able to acquire some very young whiskey, and they put it in a aluminum bottle and actually added some flavor. They had a root beer flavor, had a cinnamon flavor, I think, and I don't remember all the other flavors they've had. But then he came out with a Chicken Cock bourbon, which is called Chicken Cock Heritage. They had the Chicken Cock Bootlegger, which was a bourbon and rye blend. Now, again, they were okay, but he was able to source six-month-old whiskey at a reasonable price and put it in a bottle, and it served its purpose. It actually created the cash flow that he needed. But still in the back of his mind, he had that vision of wanting to resurrect the brand back to Kentucky and bring it back to its high-quality promise. And that's when, you know, I started my consulting business. They hired my services to help them with a few things as far as their supply chain, some operational issues. But then as Monty shared his vision and we talked more, that's when he asked me to serve in the role of master distiller. And I said, if you're serious about that, I would be honored to be the master distiller and help you resurrect the brand back to Kentucky. One condition. Stop buying this young stuff and follow this young stuff and truly focus all of our energy on bringing it back to that high quality prominence it once had. So that's awesome. Kind of been the game plan all along. And you know, as you guys got to experience the other evening, we've resurrected back thanks to our good friends over at Bardstown Bourbon Company. They've assembled the best team in the industry. You know, and I've worked for a lot of companies in this industry. And by far, they've got the best team in the industry and making some fabulous whiskey.
Excellent.
And under your, I'd just like to say, under your direction, it has really come a long way, and it is excellent. I love what you're doing.
Well, even their setup, you know, that they have at Bardstown Bourbon, you're working with Nick Smith and Steve Nally, and you're just like any other distiller. When you went in there, you saw what they had set up. You saw what control they had. But you were learning that with, you know, that where they learn. Now they have done so many different brands, but when you go in there, now that you've learned it, you pretty much have direction and whatever to really get the most out of everything that you're doing there. Whereas initially, you had to really kind of, you know, because they are running such state-of-the-art control. You know, the most distillers don't have that control, but it's still, right, a learning process when you're going through that. I mean, sometimes you find out you even have more control than you even had before, like pulling specific things out, you know what I mean, by just a degree here or entry levels or, you know.
Well, and I shared that with a number of people the other evening. Is that's one of the things that has transpired in this industry that I think is for the better. Basically, the automation, the computerization that exists today and the systems that they have over there at Bardstown Bourbon Company are second to none. You can get consistency through those. You know, as in the old days when I worked in distillery, basically the mash tub operator, the cooker operator, you know, he'd go over and he'd turn up steam valve on to bring the temperature up to 212 to cook the corn, right, for 20 minutes. And he'd get busy over here doing something else and come back and lick holes. Got up to 250 degrees, you know, so he'd turn it back down and then get busy over here and comes back, you know, 30 minutes later and said, oops, I was supposed to only cook at 20 minutes. And so, see, it's just... It eliminates the opportunity for human error.
Right.
You still have operators that have to punch in the numbers. But when you punch in, you know, I'm going to cook this corn and for 20 minutes at 212 degrees, and you punch that in, the computer comes back and says, are you sure this is what you want to do? And it's got a chance of balance. It says, yes. And so, you know, it's great. I mean,
the beauty of computer process control.
And
process control.
I understand there's an art form to doing it the old way, and there's a lot of pot distillers and small craft distillers still doing that. But what I found is, yes, you could stick that machine at Bardstown into anywhere, and it'll make up for the it'll inexperienced distiller. It'll help them. But when you take an experienced distiller who knows how to run it the old way, such as yourself, and you give them that equipment, and then they attack it like they attacked the equipment before, making sure, you know, paying attention to all the details, that's the part where I find that that machinery, that distillery can really make some fantastic distillate, you know.
Again, I think through my experience and the years I've been in the business, you know, consistency is something everybody's tried to strive for. Just thinking back, Roxy mentioned Blanton's this a little while ago, and I may have shared this story with you now, but it was actually during the Bourbon Festival time back in the, it was probably in the, probably early 2000s maybe, 2000, 2002, something like that. But I was managing director of Wild Turkey at the time, and we'd ran out about half the rooms at Hampton Inn here in Bardstown, and Buffalo Trace would ran out the other half. And I always had a hospitality suite that I'd rent. And so after the day's events or evening's events, we'd go back to the hospitality suite and we'd sip bourbons. And Elmer T. Lee, a dear friend of mine, Elmer would come down and join us. And we may sip bourbons till 2 o'clock in the morning and tell stories of that. So one evening, I was sitting there and we were drinking, I can't remember what we were drinking that evening. But I told Elmer, and you got to remember, Elmer actually created Blanton's single barrel.
Yes,
right?
Yes, yeah. 1984.
So I told Elmer, I said, Elmer, I got to tell you something. I said, you know, probably one of the best bourbons I ever tasted was a Blanton's single barrel. man, he just grinned from ear to ear, just smiled. I'm pretty proud of that. And I said, you know what, too, though, Elmer? I said, probably one of the worst bourbons I ever tasted was a Blanton single barrel. Man, he looked at me puzzled. He said, what do you mean, Greg? And I said, well, just that, pal. I said, well, you guys started Blanton's. You went to a section of the warehouse. He said, okay, the barrels on this floor and this section are all going to be Blanton single barrel. You didn't taste each barrel before you bottled it. And so that's changed since then. But back in that time, it was. You could take the same whiskey, put it in the same barrel, set them side by side in the same warehouse, and after they matured, dump them out, it'd be totally different. Totally different. And so back to the point that you made as well, Xavier, and that's the process control. What we're doing with the distillation process is all about process control. What we're doing with the barrels is all about process control. You know, I'm selecting the logs. I'm overseeing the cutting of the staves and heading. I go out there when we build the barrel to ensure that they're toasted properly to our specifications and charred properly to our specifications. And the system they got out there for the toasting, you know, it's computerized. They set the temperatures, the time, and it's all controlled. Every step in that West Virginia Great Barrel Company, their processes are all controlled. So that's how you establish and create consistency.
Yeah, you have, of your processes, you have it vertically integrated pretty much. Although it's actually horizontally integrated, but from the design is vertically integrated. And that's awesome.
Sure is.
Yeah.
It shows in your product.
But see, I agree with you totally. I've had 5 bottles of Blanton so far. And the last one I picked up is absolutely delicious. And they are tasting them now, but they can't. There's good ones and bad ones. And that's why I thought, now, when it first came out, did it have the toppers? So that's ingenious marketing, because at least you got a topper you didn't have
They didn't have the whole selection.
Now. Yeah. But now you got them. Everybody trying for the 7?
Eight stages
of the Kentucky. And if you don't get one, you still got the topper, and that'll get you to the next bottle. Right. It's great marketing by Blanton's and Buffalo Trace. But I really think that's exactly what a single barrel is. They all can't be winners, right? And it could be a great barrel for somebody, and the other person could love that barrel. That's just the way it is. But that's how they invented single barrel, and now everybody's pretty much got the single barrel. So, okay. All right, so that brings us to this. I know you have a lot to do today.
Get
over there. We are going to dinner at, say his last name, Al's.
Popsadero's
restaurant at Amore in Indiana tonight. We look forward to it. Al, this bottle's coming up to you, so if you see this, but he'll probably be working and not see it by the time. But overall,
he's in the kitchen. He's a phenomenal chef.
Yeah, and we're looking forward to getting up there. So. Thank you very much. Let me just do
thank you, Greg. My pleasure.
Greg, thank you so much.
Always a pleasure getting to hang with you guys.
Sure is.
Yeah. It's just fun.
So we are the Scotchy Bourbon Boys. I'm going to give a shout out to our sponsors, Log Still Distillery, Wally, Lynn, and Charlie. Thank you so much for sponsoring us. Also, the Spirit of French Lick, Alan Bishop, you know, you're the bish. And then also Watershed Distillery. We will be there Sunday to pick up our media kit. Look forward to seeing you, Aaron Harris. And with that, www.scotchybourbonboys.com. Go there, check out our Patreon in the top right-hand corner. Give us some support. Go to all the podcast formats, iHeartRadio, Apple, Spotify. You can ask Alexis to play the Scotchy Bourbon Boys. We're there, but just remember, make sure to give us support and subscribe. So with that, we are the Scotchy Bourbon Boys, and we'll take us out.
Yeah. All right.
You missed it?
You get your own. It's okay, it's the end.
Or show me the way.
Everybody, remember,
whiskey bar.
Good bourbon equals good friends. Go out, live dangerously, and take chances.
Show me the way to the next whiskey bar. Oh, don't ask why. Oh, don't ask why. Esquire. Oh, if we don't find the next whiskey bar, I tell you we must die.